Some of you with good memories may recall a sermon from this past November when I talked about the northwest garden of the church, the one just off the parking lot that one of our members, Dorcas, reclaimed from being a disused dumping ground for used needles, cigarette butts, and A&W wrappers. Throughout last spring and summer, Dorcas dug up the hard-packed soil, amended it with needed nutrients, planted native plants and sacred medicines like sage and sweetgrass and cedar. The idea was that this often overlooked corner of our church grounds might symbolize a new era of ministry for our church as we navigate our way out of these difficult pandemic years. And when Dorcas asked me what I might like in the garden, I said a fruit tree. One that will take some time to mature, but in time one will we will be able to share in the bounty. And so knowing where I grew up, she planted a Saskatoon berry bush. And in that sermon last November, I crooned that one day we will eat Saskatoon berry pie. And then after the service, Fran Parkin, who is a noted baker in the congregation, came up to me and said, "If you pick the berries, I'll bake the pie." And it was all very nice. And the garden was doing great this year. It was in full bloom when I returned back from my holiday. But when I arrived here at the church for worship that first Sunday in August, I saw something that stopped me in my tracks. Someone had come with a whippersnipper and mown down all the plants. Branches on the bushes were broken. The stump for sitting was gone. The sacred medicines had been cut down and carted away. I felt like I was going to throw up. I texted Dorcas, and very understandably, she was pretty upset too. We don't know who did it. It certainly wasn't any of our staff. But given that the area around the manse was also whipper-snipped, someone was probably hired by someone to do some cleanup in the area. And they just weren't paying attention. They just didn't notice that this little garden, this little corner of creation was important and cared for and holy in its own way. I'm not going to lie, I'm still quite upset about it. But I've had a month now to reflect on this incident. In addition to feeling awful because of all the care and effort that Dorcas put into the garden, there are two other aspects of this that still sit heavy with me. I see the world in metaphor. It's just the way my mind works. And so when I see what happened to this small corner of creation, I can't help but see and feel intensely what we are doing to creation as a whole, what we are doing to life on this planet, to farmland, to wildlife, to habitat, to the oceans, to the climate. You likely saw news reports recently that July was the hottest month ever recorded. When I was in Saskatchewan this summer, the drought conditions were so bad that any land not under irrigation isn't going to get a crop at all this year. Combine this with the forest fires that have forced thousands of people to flee their homes, and the vast plumes of acrid smoke that even we here in our urbanity can't ignore, it is undeniable that this has been a summer where creation has been crying out, screaming at us to stop and take notice, to see what is going on, what is happening, what we are doing to this planet. And I've got kids. And I know some of you do too, or grandkids, or nieces, or nephews. And I don't know about you, but I am finding it increasingly difficult to muster words of hope about the kind of world we are leaving to them. I think in metaphors. It's just the way my mind works. And so when I see what happened to our garden, knowing that it was intended to symbolize the new ministry we are trying to build here, I can't help but feel anxiety and sadness about what is going on in the church here locally, but also denominationally, globally. The swells of secularism that have been building for decades are now a full-blown tidal wave, and our traditions and history and sense of rootedness in spiritual community are being washed away before our eyes. reactionary, hyper-individuality, where it is all about me and my needs and my comfort and my personal brand, is winning the day over any shared sense of common story or common sacrifice for common good. Now, don't get me wrong, the crimes of Christianity are well documented, and our empire-building days needed to end, but we are now quintessentially in a baby with the bathwater moment where that which is good and beautiful is being washed away alongside the detritus of our institutionality that admittedly was too powerful for too long. But now, in this time of trying to build something new with goodwill and the best intentions, we work so hard to plant seeds of hope with our words and our music and our actions of service, it is apparently very easy to be mown down. And like the garden, mown down not necessarily by malice, but by inattention, by a culture that is no longer paying attention, not just to the church, but to the deep-seated human need for spirituality and spiritual community, for ritual and mystery and ceremony, for connection to something greater, for connection to something more, for connection to God, for connection to God and God's mission of healing in this hurting world. A long time ago, Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to the mountain of God. There, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, "I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up." When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." "Here I am," he said. Biblical history records Moses as a prophet of God and the great leader of the Hebrew people. But at this point in his story, Moses is a simple sheepherd. He has a checkered past and is now living a simple life in the hill country of Midian. He has a family. He has a job. On the morning of this incident, he probably had a to-do list running through his head just like the rest of us. And he could very easily have been distracted just like we often are. Take note that the Exodus text does not say how long the bush had been burning. Perhaps Moses had passed by this way before and was so preoccupied he didn't notice it until now. There was once a rabbinical gathering that considered the question, why was the bush burning but not consumed? The rabbis ruminated on a variety of possible answers until one of them offered thoughtfully, "The bush was burning and not consumed so that one day as Moses walked by, he would notice it." The implication being that God is always calling, and sometimes we notice. Or put another way, God keeps calling until we notice. It is vital to notice here, I think, that the medium of God's communication is a burning bush. It is a living thing in distress. It is a living thing in distress. Creation itself reveals God's prophetic intention. Out of creation itself comes the call, "Moses, Moses, I have observed the misery of my people. I have heard their cry. Indeed, I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land to a land flowing with milk and honey." The philosopher Aristotle considered God to be the unmoved mover, the great cosmic force that sets the game in motion but remains unmoved by the plight of specific pieces. What we see here in Exodus is the exact opposite of that. God says, "I have observed the misery. I have heard the cries. I know the sufferings. What we see here is not the unmoved mover, but what Abraham Heschel called the most moved mover. What we see here is the most moved mover, the Holy One who knows and feels the pain of the world. I have observed the misery. I have heard the cries. I know the sufferings. I will bring liberation. I will bring new life. But Moses, Moses, I need your help. I am sending you. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people out of Egypt. God needs Moses. As the theologian Bruce Epperly notes, God has power, the power to sustain the universe and to guide the arc of history towards goodness, but at the micro level of cells and souls and community, God allows the freedom of human agency. Divine power is real, but it is always intimately connected to human openness and human decisions. We are constantly called, as Jewish mysticism affirms, to be God's partners in the healing of the world. In our sacred texts and in the world around us, the mediums of God's communication are living things in distress. Through people and plants and trees and bees, God is calling us to stop and take notice, to hear the cries, even when we are busy, even when we are distracted, even when we have a job to do and a to-do list 10 miles long, to stop, take notice, and hear God's call for liberation and for healing. To stop, take notice, even when things look ugly or broken or hopeless, to stop and take off our shoes, for in God's creation we are always standing on holy ground, to remove the barriers between us and the earth, and to bear witness that all around us, all the time, new sprouts of hope are forever breaking through the detritus of our days and reaching upwards, upwards towards the light. In the weeks since the whippersnapper incident in the Northwest Garden, our property staff have been out there watering, and I have been out there praying, and Dorcas has been out there tending and caring. And there now, even amongst the damaged and twisted branches, new sprouts are growing. The milkweed and dogwood and black-eyed Susans and coneflowers and wild strawberries and sage and sweetgrass and cedar are all bouncing back. And yes, the Saskatoon berry bush is holding its own. The garden has lost a year of growth, and not all the plants will survive, but with our participation, this corner of creation, of God's good creation, will heal and will flourish again. I think in metaphors. It's how my mind works. And so in that tiny patch of earth, out there next to the asphalt and the A&W wrappers, I see the resiliency of creation. I see the constancy of God's good and healing intentions for the world. And like Moses with the burning bush, God will just keep calling. God will just keep calling until we can no longer not pay attention to the plight of the planet. And whenever that happens, now and into the future, our faith affirms that God will always partner with us in the healing of our world. And when my kids come to me with their anxiety over climate change and habitat loss, I can take them to our garden and show them evidence of this. Show them the metaphor made tangible by what people and the most moved mover can do when we work together in partnership. There on that tiny corner of our church grounds, I see the resiliency of creation. I see the resiliency of the church, our church. Even if it feels like things are being mowed down in this rapidly changing culture of hyper-individualism, the desire to connect with that which is deeper and larger has not gone away. Our need for community and connection, truth and beauty, still lives at the heart of the human soul. And for so many in this world who feel lost or alone are overwhelmed or broken, there may be a time when they can no longer ignore their need. And in times like these, the church can fulfill its mission, not in power, but through healing. Healing that which has been broken, partnering with God to heal the broken. That is our mission. Even in difficult days, if we stop and look around and take notice, we might just see that something beautiful and mission-filled is already taking root amongst us. Consider that right now, the Saskatoon berry bush outside is sending its roots deeper, ever deeper into the soil. Next spring, it will send its branches higher, ever higher towards the light. It will flower and it will be fertilized by the bees attracted to the other plants and sacred medicines around it. And it will bear fruit. Each year it will bear more, ever more of its sweet fruit. And I have hope and I have faith that one day we will eat pie together as a community, as broken but beloved children of God, as the Church of Jesus Christ here on this holy ground, we will eat pie together. And it will be so very good. Amen.